Welcome to In the Booth on Sportsnet 650, your official home of the Vancouver Canucks. I'm Brendan Batchelor, as always, joined by Randeep Janda. And In the Booth is brought to you by Bells and Whistles.
That's right. Catch all the action, hockey, football, soccer, and more with happy hour pints for $6.75 at 3296 Fraser Street, just off of Kingsway, right in the Fraser Hood. Bells and Whistles, our home for sports, our home for good beer as well. And I got to say, the patio weather is coming around, Batch. It's got an elite patio as well.
Yeah, some beautiful weather here on a Friday in Vancouver. And it's starting to feel like spring. It's starting to feel like things are coming around, at least outside. Now, with the Vancouver Canucks, maybe less so, coming off a disappointing 5-0 loss to the Seattle Kraken.
You talk about the weather, it also sounds like it's golf season, because there's a less than 2% chance that this team makes the playoffs. The odds are what they are.
7 games remaining in the regular season. That starts tomorrow afternoon when the Canucks host the Anaheim Ducks. Note the early start time, a 1 o'clock faceoff. The pregame show will get underway at noon right here on Sportsnet 650. And we're going to do something a little bit different on the show this week. We asked for your best Canucks hot takes, and you, the listener, delivered. So we'll talk a little bit here about that loss to Seattle, about what the rest of the regular season has in store. Then you and I each are going to pitch a hot take too. And then after the break, we will hear the hot takes from the listeners, and we'll go through those and their legitimacy and how hot they really are, and whether it's something we could see happening. So hot takes coming up this week on In the Booth.
And I'm excited for this. I used to do this a lot when I was hosting Reach Deep back in the day. As game callers, we don't have hot takes as much. You know,
no.
We stick to the play on the ice. But today on In the Booth, we're bringing some spicy ones. Like, I've done the one-chip challenge, Batch. I feel like your take might be hotter than the one chip challenge.
Yeah, and I've been soft launching my hot take to some members of the media around the market here. So I've kind of thrown it out there a little bit. I've got varied responses on it. I'm going to be very interested to see what the listeners think. So make sure to stay tuned for that. But yes, the Canucks lost 5-0 to the Seattle Kraken on Wednesday, and the injury issues continue to mount for them. Tyler Myers didn't play late in that game. Rick Tocchet said earlier today that Myers is day-to-day, not expected to play against the Ducks on Saturday. Niels Omon had a really scary fall into the boards at UBC at practice on Friday. He was seen leaving the arena in a sling, so the assumption there is that he's not going to be able to play on Saturday. Nils Höglander, trending in the right direction, was out of his non-contact jersey, but isn't expected to play on Saturday, according to Rick Tocchet. And it's just another injury in Oman's case, and Myers being out now as well, in a long list of things that have gone wrong for this team this year.
Yeah, it's unfortunate because this is a team that's been battling it so hard this year. When you talk about, obviously, just the vibes being off, but there's been injuries. There's been, you know, Dakota Joshua and his diagnosis before the season even started. So to me, this is, you know, another stretch where the Canucks are having to deal with adversity. And it's tough because those playoff hopes, even though they're there, we can sense that it's not going to happen at this point in time with the St. Louis Blues continuing to win. And now you just have more injuries. You have players, veteran players that have, you know, worked their tails off this year that are now going through injuries. For that negative, there's also a positive for young players. They're going to get an opportunity to show what they can do. So I think from a self-interest perspective, try to set yourself up for next year. Some great opportunities for some young players.
Yeah, and as of the time of recording here on Friday afternoon, we haven't seen a recall from Abbotsford, but I would imagine that a centerman would come up under emergency conditions, assuming that Oman can't play. That would likely be Max Sasson, who was just up with the team, although he didn't get into the lineup in an emergency situation on the road trip. So yeah, Atu Ratu, Max Sasson, Linus Karlsson, Elias Pettersson, Victor Mancini, who probably gets into the lineup with Myers not being able to play on Saturday. That is what remains in this season. And the team is not mathematically eliminated. They still have 7 games left, but it's basically finished at this point. That said, you still have to treat these games like they mean something in case they do, and especially for these young players to play at this time of the year, to play in games that do officially have meaning, even if unofficially a lot of people are writing this team off. That's going to be important for their development, and we don't even know about Tom Vilander and whether he's going to come in here at some point.
Yeah, that's a big part here, and I think a lot of this also focuses on the fact that these are home games. You have to give your paying crowd a reason to be positive, a reason for hope of the future. And those young players, whether it's Elias Pettersson, whether it's Mancini, who's played pretty well when he's been in the lineup, Atu Ratu, you mentioned, you know, his revival, so to speak, his renaissance coming up from the AHL has been a strong one. He's shown that he can learn very, very quickly, and I've loved what he's seen there. Linus Karlsson, another player that maybe that finish isn't quite there, but he's getting to the right spots. The other thing is, and I think this is a big thing for me, Thatcher Demko, there's a few more games left, seven games left as of right now. How many games does he get? And had a tough one against Seattle. Can you get that consistency from Thatcher Demko? Or, you know, the previous five games, he was unreal, going back to that Toronto game on February 8th. But can you find some confidence in his game heading into the offseason where he comes back hopefully healthy, and all of a sudden you have options with him and Lankinen moving forward?
Yeah, confidence with him is important, but just getting through the year without another injury is important so that he can have a big summer. And unfortunately, we're back into big summer season here, where we all remember a couple of years ago when Rick Tocchet came in the back half of the season and this team was out of the playoff race. He spoke time and time again about this guy needs to have a big summer, that guy needs to have a big summer. And we haven't heard that from him yet because the team is mathematically alive, but we're going to hear it soon. And that applies especially to a guy like Thatcher Demko, who obviously didn't get the proper summer of training last year because of the injury. And he has even admitted that that affected him when he did get into the crease. So, you know, I mean, Neil Zomon went down today. Tyler Myers went down last game. You know, it feels like there's a sniper in the rafters of Rogers Arena waiting to pick off the next healthy player that's playing well. But, you know, now you're into survival mode. Get through the season. Don't have any major injuries. Get as many guys into the offseason healthy as you can so you can start building towards next year already.
Well, the behind-the-scenes action for the team is going to be interesting, too, because every player, if they're under contract, will have a program coming from the player hockey ops department and saying you got to stick to that. And staying healthy is the first thing, of course. But another player I'm going to throw in there that didn't have a training camp, Dakota Joshua.
Yeah.
We've seen him over the last week or so. His game's gone up. I think he's getting to his spots a little bit better. It's not perfect yet, but he's trending in the right direction. But remember, with everything that happened with him, his diagnosis and having surgery and all of that, he missed a lot of time, and he missed time to get fit and active and ready to go. And that, for a player that is, you know, A, you have a medical procedure, you have to deal with that. And then getting into playing shape and just playing catch up the entire season, if he can stay healthy the rest of the way here, if he can go into the summer feeling good about himself, I think that's a player to watch for next year as well. And, you know, for these games are meaningful to him too, because you want to head into the offseason with confidence. But with Dak, he just hasn't been there, I think, physically this season, and it's totally understandable why. But he's the guy to watch, I think, for the remaining seven games and heading into the offseason.
Yeah, absolutely. So more young players getting into the lineup, opportunity for those guys, for guys that have had down seasons. It's a chance for them to finish strong and feel good about their game going into the summer. And you know what? As much as the odds are so slim, you said under 2%, the mentality that those guys will have and need to have is win your games and see what happens. And you know what? If you win six of your last seven, five of your last seven, hey, if you win all seven, then at least you can go into the offseason saying, we pushed right until the end. We did everything we could. And ultimately, all the adversity and some of our struggles protecting leads and closing out games and winning in overtime earlier in the season cost us. But, you know, I think that's important for these guys, too, as much as many fans might scoff at this. To be able to hold your head high with a strong stretch to end the season, I think, is important to set the tone for an important summer for a lot of players.
Absolutely. Between the ears, you want to feel confident. You want to feel like, hey, you've put your best foot forward. The other thing is, batch job security, right? For a lot of players right now, the coaching staff and management are still watching to see, do they have that motor? And Rick Tocchet, even on that, you know, when he pulled the goalie, he wanted to see who was going, who was still in that game against Seattle. That was kind of a test for his team. Management and coaching is still looking to see, all right, mathematically, there's not much of a chance there, but who is still motivated? Who between the ears is still motivated to finish this and be a leader on this team? So I think, you know, that's a huge part of this, where there's a test for a lot of players on that roster, from guys that are paid very well to the, you know, the depth players, to see, all right, do you have the mental makeup to be a leader on this team?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is something that we hear scouts talk about when they're scouting young players before the NHL draft is, does your demeanor change when you're up 10-0? Does your demeanor change when you're down 10-0? Or do you just get after it and do your job and try and control what you can control regardless of any of the outside situations? So that's the test for this team right now, and that is the curve that we will be grading them on the rest of the way this season. Okay, it's hot take time. So we're going to get into plenty of great hot takes from the listeners in a few minutes, but we decided we would each drop a hot take. So would you like to do the honors, or would you like me to come with my hot take first?
Yours is so hot, I think it needs to wait. We need to build even more anticipation, but I've got one that's pretty spicy as well. I'm a big vibes guy, Batch, and when the vibes are off, you got to make a change. And the vibes around Elias Pettersson have not been great the last year. So for me, my hot take, what happens this offseason? Elias Pettersson is going to the New York Islanders for Matt Barzal 1-4-1.
Oh, not Bo Horvat.
Not Bo Horvat. We're going for the 27-year-old, often a winger, but has historically been a center, puck-carrying player whose vibes in New York haven't been great either. He's had a lot of injuries. He's not dealing from a position of strength, and neither is Elias Pettersson. And that's why this deal makes a lot of sense to me. So that is my hot take. Both players need a change. PD for obvious reasons. Barzal has had some injury trouble. It feels like he's kind of worked his way down the pecking order a little bit in New York with Bo Horvat's arrival. They're looking for something maybe different. They're going through a bit of a retool themselves. So speed, puck carrying, attacking from transition.
Great power play player, Matt Barzal, too.
And like all those things about speed and transition, that's the way that the Vancouver Canucks want to play. They want a guy that can attack with the puck on his stick. When Barzal is healthy, he's that guy. In a normal year, 1-for-1 would not work because I think you could get more for Elias Pettersson. But we know it's not a normal year. That stock has fallen a little bit. So that's why I think Elias Pettersson can go somewhere else and be that player again. But the question is he going to be that in Vancouver? So that's why I think this is a 1-for-1.
Yeah, that's the only area I would quibble with it is value and saying, okay, if that's where you're selling on Pettersson, then maybe it makes more sense to hold and to hope that his game trends in the right direction, either so that he can be a meaningful part of your own team or that his value increases and you can get a better return from him. Now, obviously, with the no movement clause kicking in July, that adds a little bit of urgency to this situation. So I like this hot take. I think it's an interesting one. I think Barzal does fit more of what this team is looking for. He's a local product too, right? I've been watching him since he was 15 years old playing as a AP for the Coquitlam Express in the BCHL. So, you know, this is a guy that has ties to this market, has ties to the Lower Mainland, grew up here, and to bring him home and put him in a key role for this team with his skill set fitting the identity of the way they want to play, I think does make a lot of sense. So again, these are hot takes. We're not saying they're going to happen. We're not even necessarily saying that they 100% should happen, but I like it. It's spicy. I can see it. I can see it.
There's going to be people that don't like it. There's going to be people that might like it. There's going to be people saying, hey, Matt Barzal has a 22-team no trade clause, which he does. And I don't know if Vancouver's on that, but the fact of the matter is it's a hot take. It's some of it's logical, some of it's not.
Exactly. And now we can turn the attention to my hot take,
right,
which
what do you got?
Is theoretically illogical, but stick with me through this.
All right,
so
I'm listening.
What is the number one thing that everybody around this team continues to say is the priority for the organization?
Quinn Hughes?
Keeping Quinn Hughes here. Convincing Quinn Hughes to extend, making sure he doesn't want to leave in a couple of years when his contract is up. So if we start from the basis of that is your number one priority over all else, and I know some people might disagree with that, but let's say, okay, what is the one thing you can do to make 100% sure Quinn Hughes wants to stay in Vancouver?
Well, you got to give him support, right?
You've got to give him support. And you might want to give him some family support,
okay,
as well. And I know that most of the conversations around the league or around the Hughes family have been assuming that at some point Quinn might want to join his brothers in New Jersey. The interesting factor around this, Luke Hughes is a restricted free agent this summer. Now, the Devils may end up locking him up, and they'll probably try to before it gets to this point. But if you get to the point where Luke Hughes becomes that restricted free agent, my hot take is you have to offer sheet Luke Hughes. And it doesn't matter the dollar amount. Obviously, you would have to offer sheet at a very high dollar amount in order to get him to come to Vancouver, in order for the Devils to walk away and not match, which means you'd be giving up a ton in compensation, potentially 4 first-round picks. But to me, this isn't just viewed under the lens of 4 first-round picks for Luke Hughes. It is 4 first-round picks for Luke Hughes and to be able to continue to have Quinn Hughes. And to me, I would say if your number one priority is keeping the captain on your roster, then it's worth the pain of giving up that much to ensure that your captain, that arguably the best defenseman in the world, remains in Vancouver and gets to play with his brother. And even if you offer sheet Luke Hughes and he doesn't accept, New Jersey matches, he stays with the Devils. You have sent a clear message to your captain that you are going to do whatever you can to support him and to show that you want him to remain in this organization, including a willingness to give up all sorts of draft capital to get his brother here. So even if you offer sheet him and it doesn't work out, it sends a really good message to Quinn Hughes. And I think, you know, ultimately we may not get there. Luke Hughes probably doesn't become a restricted free agent. The Devils probably lock him up before that. But if he gets there, offer sheet Luke Hughes and Quinn will stay.
All right, I love that because that's aggressive. That's not dealing from a position of uncertainty where you're trying to, you know, take the asset you have and saying, how do you make it better? How do you just tweak it a little bit? No, this is saying assertive. This is the Vancouver Canucks saying, we're going to grab the bull by the horns. I love it. It's spicy. What would that number look like, though? What are we talking about? When you're offer sheeting somebody, Dylan Holloway, Broberg was aggressive from St. Louis.
But it was two guys on one team, and the cap's going up. So we're talking like $9 or $10 million, probably.
Yeah. I like the idea. I think it takes the leverage from New Jersey having the path going to them. All of a sudden, Vancouver saying, no, we're in this. We're in this game. Jack Hughes, you got a decision to make. Do you want to stay in New Jersey long-term, or do you want to join your brothers in Vancouver? Because right now, the conversation is, Quinn's going that way. Long-term, it's the elephant in the room in Vancouver. This swings a leverage. It's spicy. Don't get me wrong. I still think NHL GMs are still going to cower when it comes to the offer sheet for the most part, but maybe Doug Armstrong changed that. Maybe. I like this.
Well, and I have seen some reporting this past week that this might be offer sheet season, right? Like this year might be the year where teams are more willing to explore this. And regardless of whether you think this specific take is a good one or not, what I think we can agree on is that Canucks management is going to need to be aggressive this summer. And this would be an incredibly aggressive move. Now, I fully understand the counter arguments to it, and we'll lay them out here, which is that you've got two really good drafts coming up, especially the 2026 draft with Gavin McKenna at the top of it, where that pick has incredible value and could be incredibly important for this organization to keep, especially if Quinn Hughes is going to leave, because then if Quinn Hughes leaves, you're probably in a rebuild. And at that point, you really want to be picking high in that draft. You potentially could be in the lottery, depending on if you move on from Quinn Hughes and how all of that happens. And again, this is all so hypothetical. We want to state that clearly. We do not expect Quinn Hughes to leave at this point. We have no reason to think that the captain doesn't want to be here trying to pull on the rope in the right direction. But I just keep hearing. I hear it on our airwaves. I hear it in the market. I hear it talking to people all the time. What are you going to do to convince Quinn to stay? How do you make sure Quinn is going to stay? Bring Luke to Vancouver. Bring Luke to Vancouver. That's my
pitch.
I love it.
So, you know, the interesting part of this is Pat Brisson obviously is representative to all three brothers. And usually, and this is what we heard from the St. Louis offer sheet situation, Darren Ferris is the one that drove the bus. He actually, according to the Cam and Strick podcast, approached the St. Louis Blues about the offer sheet himself.
It was from the agent's side, yes, that it happened.
So really the kingmaker in this entire situation is Pat Brisson.
Now, in this case, I don't think it would be Pat Brisson spearheading this. I think it would have to be the Canucks doing so.
But Pat Brisson would have a huge role in this because players, we hear about offer sheets very little, but these discussions happen behind the scenes. Like, players reject them all the time. We only hear them when they're actually submitted and accepted.
Which is why it would have to be a big, it would have to be a, you cannot walk away from this number, kind of number that you would have to offer to Luke Hughes. There's a lot of inherent risk in that, too.
Yeah, you can't do the Montreal to Sebastian Aho, which was like a highly affordable number. Like, that's a waste. It's got to be, to your point, like a $10 million hit. Because...
Or, okay, hear me out then. We're going to workshop this.
All right, what do you got?
Or, it doesn't necessarily have to be a massive number. Because even if you do it, it sends the message you want it to send to Quinn, right? Look, we went out and we tried to do this. It didn't work out, but this is how much we want you. We are willing to give up these assets. We really want you to stay. And we took a very serious try at acquiring your brother. Even if it doesn't work out, I think it still sends a good message to the captain.
Well, you know, we talked about the Jim Benning summer a couple of years ago when he traded for Connor Garland and Oliver Ekman-Larsson. Looking back at that deal, Connor's been a solid player for the Canucks, but overall, you can say Vancouver lost that deal. The Oliver Ekman-Larsson buyout situation, all that. What does the Jim Rutherford-Patrick Alvin big summer look like? Because they haven't had one yet. They've been pretty fiscally conservative since it is election season. I'll throw that out there. They've kind of, you know, made deals around the edges. They've looked for value.
And they're going to have room to spend this summer as well.
The big Jim Rutherford summer or the big Patrick Alvin summer, what does that look like? Because whether it's offer sheets, whether it's the trade, which was my hot take, something's going to happen, Batch. We just don't know what it is. And that's why this hot take idea is a great one, because I'm curious about what listeners and fans think as well.
So it's not going to be a hot girl summer. It's going to be a hot take summer around the Vancouver
Canucks. I thought you were going to say a hot gym summer. I was like, okay, I wasn't ready for that.
No, that's all you. I wasn't going to say that. But anyway, we've got plenty of hot takes coming in from you, the listener, and we're going to get to those after the break. Hey, let us know. What do you think of our hot takes? Pettersson for Barzal or an offer sheet for Luke Hughes? You can reach us on Twitter at Batch Hockey, at Randeep Janda, at Sportsnet 650. We'll be back with more in a moment on In the Booth on your official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to In the Booth on Sportsnet 650, your official home of the Vancouver Canucks. I'm Brendan Batchelor, as always, joined by Randeep Janda. And this is the part of the show where we remind you that if you're listening on the radio, if you've missed any part of the program, it lives as a podcast as well on the Canucks Central podcast feed. Subscribe to that to get every episode of In the Booth. You get every episode of Canucks Central with Sat and Reach every weekday, and you get every Canucks postgame show with Sat and Bic as well. And In the Booth here on Sportsnet 650 is brought to you by Bells and Whistles.
Catch all the action, hockey, football, soccer, and more with happy hour pints for $6.75, 3296 Fraser Street, just off of Kingsway, right in the Fraser Hood. And it is patio season. No better patio than Bells and Whistles, just off of Kingsway.
And it's hot take season as well this week here on In the Booth, as we asked you to send us your best Canucks hot takes so that we could discuss them here on the show. And you have delivered. Some of these takes very hot, some of them less so. A lot of them I could see being realistic. So let's start with Jim Leahy on Twitter, who writes in and says, Pettersson has 100 points next year. Now, the problem here is he doesn't specify which Pettersson. So if Marcus Pettersson's going to have 100 points next year, that is an incredibly hot take. If Elias Pettersson's going to have 100 points next year, very hot take. Still a relatively hot take with Elias Pettersson because of the down year he's had, but at the same time, we've seen him do it before. And let's make it clear, you know, you had the hot take before the break about Pettersson to the Islanders for Barzal, and you know, while the option is there for the organization to trade him this summer, I think ultimately we can agree the best case scenario for Elias Pettersson, the best case scenario for the Vancouver Canucks, is that he gets back to the peak of his game. So I hope Jim's right with his hot take, Elias Pettersson, 100-point player next year.
Absolutely. And, you know, we've seen the potential. We've seen him put up 89 points. We've seen him put up 102 points and be a point per game player and then some in the NHL. I like the take, but he's going to have to show a lot more than he did this past season, even going back a year and a half. The player, from a speed perspective, not the same guy. So do you have a little more separation in this league that is so fast? I think that's the most important thing, confidence and speed. And those are the two things that have been lacking from Elias Pettersson's game. If he can get those back, you know, 100 points, I don't see that as a hot take. It's just a matter of, we know the talent's there, but physically, he's got to look right again.
Yeah, well, and, you know, we talked about how we're getting into big summer time of the year where, you know, Demko could have a big summer, Joshua could have a big summer. Hey, that applies to Pettersson too, especially if that knee tendonitis did affect his training last year. Well, this year, I know he's a little bit banged up right now. We'll see if he gets back into the lineup before the end of the season. But you would hope anyway that whatever he's dealing with now is relatively minor. Rick Tocchet has talked about him being day-to-day and starting to feel better. So there shouldn't be an excuse this time around with Elias Pettersson. He should be able to have a good summer and come back in and be the kind of player that he has been in the past. Our next hot take comes in from Fish Dancer, who says, Canucks trade for Pasternak in the summer, Vlander, and two firsts.
Ooh. Okay. Anytime you're getting David Pasternak in a trade, I'm all for that. Heck of a player, one of the best goal scorers, and he scores so many different ways. Is that the player that they go after if they're going all in, though?
And the reason I say no, and again, I like it. It's a good hot take. It's bold. It's spicy. The Bruins are entering a rebuild here, although I don't know if they'd be willing to move off David Pasternak, although the price of a former first-round pick and two more first-round picks might tempt them, certainly.
And a player that plays in that area, so they probably got their views on Vlander quite a bit with BU, right?
Yeah, exactly. My thing here, though, is if you're going to give up three prime assets for an impact player, it needs to be a centerman. And David Pasternak is still a winger.
Yeah, but he's one of the best wingers in the league.
That's
the thing.
But like, is David Pasternak a guy that would drive play on his own, or is he one of the best complementary wingers in the game? Like, I'm not taking anything away from Pasternak. He's a tremendous player. I understand why you would give up that value. But if he's playing on a line with Teddy Bluger, does that help you?
Okay, so in this deal, you've got Vlander two first. The assumption is Elias Pettersson is still on this team, and he'd be playing with Elias Pettersson. Mm-hmm. A pass first center for a shoot first winger. So I like it. I'm not going to lie. Like, I like that idea, because in this scenario, you still got a high-end center. Maybe allows Jake DeBrusk to settle into that second-line role with a Pugh Suter or somebody else. The Canucks do have to add a center.
And we've got another hot take from someone else about Pugh Suter coming up in a bit.
So, yes, he's not a center, but if you're looking for that duo for Elias Pettersson, and if Brock Besser is not involved in this team, and we're talking about a big trade batch, you could do a lot worse than David Pasternak in this league. That's for sure.
Yeah, it's a good hot take. Like, I don't dislike it as a hot take. I think it's strong. I just think to give up three prime pieces like that, you want it to be at one of your core positions, which is goaltender, which is defense, which is center ice. And we know that center ice, it has to be the number one priority for this team in the summer, regardless of whether Pettersson stays or goes.
Yeah, I think with Fish Dancer on this one, there's the assumption maybe that if Elias Pettersson is this player, or like in 75 to 80 point player, who do you play him next to him, to get that more juice out of that line? And Pasternak, even though he's not a center, he's a heck of a player that can help drive play. So I think if that's your duo on the top line, you might be saying, all right, not a premium position, but it's going to drive that first line and provide some oomph. I like that hot take. We'll see. We'll see what happens. It's not a premium position, though.
No.
But remember, defense is kind of sorted out.
That's true. I just worry about what your second line looks like.
That's fair.
And maybe you say, okay, you bring back Pugh Suter. You hope Philip Hedl's healthy. You've got Teddy Bluger. You've got Atu Ratu now. So you have some depth. Like, center ice depth is not their issue. It's top of the lineup centerman.
What you might have is actually a Boston situation a couple of years ago when they had the perfection line, or even after the perfection line, you had a stacked first line. But after that, it was a who's who of depth players, essentially. You had Charlie Coyle playing down the middle before they traded for Zacha. And you're right, the depth is not there. So you have a loaded top line, and everybody else is basically the price of right, price is right. Come down the aisle. It's your turn. Your turn to play, you know, in this lineup.
And hey, maybe that would work. Our next hot take from Justin in East Van: Derek Forbert will win the Unsung Hero Award for the Canucks this year. And I don't know if this take is that hot, because I think Derek Forbert is a perfect example of someone that should win this award. He has been an important penalty killer for them all season long. He's quietly gone about his business at the bottom of the lineup when he's been in the lineup, and we know he had some issues missing time due to family situations and injuries and things like that. But if I was picking an unsung hero of this team, I probably would pick Derek Forbert at this point.
He's quietly done his job, and he's surprised people along the way with some of his offense. Like, he's not going to light up the league with his points, but he's shown that he's got more in his game, whether it's scoring a goal or two goals this year. He had some playmaking recently as well on a couple of plays.
Scored a nice goal off the rush not too long ago.
That's right, set up by Jake DeBrusk, and also made a heck of a pass to the middle of the ice from below the goal line in the last couple of weeks. So there's something there, but key for, you know, this penalty kill unit, I think that's where Marcus Pedersen gets a lot of the love. Derek Forbert's been equally important, or just as important, on that PK unit. He doesn't block as many shots as Ian Cole, but he doesn't have to. His angles are so good. He plugs up the passing lane. He plugs up the shooting lanes. And that's why I think, you know, he's very underrated. Another player, I know this is a hot take, but I think he deserves his flowers. Tyler Myers. Like, unsung player this year. Like, a lot. It's funny what can change when you start making less money, right? You go from being the most overrated player based on a lot of opinions in the city. And now, I think for me, like, Derek Forbert and Tyler Myers are probably the two unsung heroes, where Myers has been quietly solid. He's been, fit into his role on that right-hand side. And he's been a leader in the room for this group as well. So I give my vote to Tyler Myers, but I like the Derek Forbert shout.
Yeah, good hot take. Thanks for that. The next one comes from Basketball Phil. He's got a real hot take. And you know what? Maybe this is a real hot take, too. You tell me. He says, Janda is inducted into the Killarney Hall of Fame media division.
Wow, that's a hot take. That's a hot take.
I didn't know the Killarney Hall of Fame had a media division.
You know what? I don't think it does. So unless Basketball Phil is up to something and he's talking to the administration over at Killarney Secondary School, my former high school, that's a hot take, though. I don't know if I'm making the Hall of Fame anytime soon. There's a lot of folks that went to that school. I think Milan Lucic is probably going to make the Hall of Fame first as the Cup champion. And then also Colin Mockery went to Killarney.
Oh, yeah.
Whose line is it anyway, of comedians? So I think I'm like at least fourth in line, fifth in line for any Hall of Fame class.
You know who might be ahead of me into the Dr. Charles Best Secondary Hall of Fame in Coquitlam?
Who's that?
The guy you want them to acquire, Matt Barzell.
Matty Barzell, there you go.
So it comes full circle there. Basketball Phil does write in, though, and his hot take is that Ty Young takes over the net in Abbotsford next season and makes his NHL debut towards the end of the year due to an injury in the crease.
All right. So Ty Young, that's a 2022 fifth round pick for anybody that has forgotten the young man, and he's currently playing in the ECHL with the Kalamazoo Wings.
Formerly of the Prince George Cougars in the WHL.
That's right. So him playing next season in the AHL is the prediction, the hot take. If you look at his numbers this year in the E, he's putting up, what, .935 save percentage? So he's excelling at that level right now.
And the interesting part of this, and this is what makes it a hot take, is you are saying that if Ty Young is going to take over in the crease in Abbotsford, then there are at least three goaltenders ahead of him on the pecking order right now that either have to leave the organization or that he has to pass. Artur Shelov's is obviously one of them because Lankinen's under contract, and as of right now, we assume that Demko's coming back, although maybe part of the subtext to this hot take is that Demko doesn't come back, and that knocks either Shelov's or Nikita Tolopilo up into the NHL potentially. They've got the young goaltender Koskinvuo, I believe you pronounce his name.
Yep.
They just signed him as well. There is a crowded crease in terms of who's going to get minutes in Abbotsford next year. So this is a pretty hot take to say that Ty Young is going to make that jump, but I can understand where he's coming from too when you talk about the ECHL numbers.
Yeah, the two players that I really wonder about long-term in a Vancouver Canucks jersey are Artur Shelov, because he had his opportunity this year, and maybe it was too much too soon, but I think he's got to show what he can do here maybe in the playoffs for Abbotsford, where if he takes the crease and he has a heck of a playoffs, guess what? He's back in that conversation for, you know, potentially challenging at the NHL level. If he doesn't batch, then you are probably saying, okay, what's the future here in Vancouver? Nikita Tolopil hasn't had a great season in the AHL either. I think there's been a harder transition for him to the AHL level over the last 2 years. You know, what's the future there? So two goaltenders that when they were signed and when they were brought into Vancouver, there was a lot of hype and there was a lot of optimism, and very well could be, you know, an optimistic situation, but they got to show something here. So that Ty Young hot take, I like it because, you know, kid's 20 years old and he's going to probably see some AHL time next year. Remember, they've got Yuri Patera also on the roster, and he's a veteran. He's probably going to move on to another city, potentially, or he's under contract for another year. But, you know, we've seen him be claimed on waivers, and the Canucks claimed him back, so you never know with a veteran in that situation. But I like that hot take, I got to say. I think Ty Young getting NHL games at the end of next year, that's spicy.
It shows you how long this season has been that I completely forgot about Yuri Patera being within this organization. And if I'm not mistaken, he did leave briefly to the Boston Bruins and then was reclaimed on waivers. So maybe that's part of it. But yeah, Yuri Patera, another goaltender in the mix, played 7 games this season in Abbotsford as well. Our next hot take comes in from Jay. And this is a pretty good spicy one, similar to yours. He says, Petey will be traded to Seattle for McCann, Beniers, and a high-end prospect. Seattle gets a blue-chip player around which to build and market. Vancouver gets 2 centers to help retool. And, you know, McCann has played more on the wing lately, so, you know, that's not necessarily the case unless it's a high-end center ice prospect. But this is a spicy one, too, trading him within the division just down I-5. And trying to give Seattle a player that they can build around as a star player in that market, or potentially, depending on how you view it, throwing them a hand grenade.
And they, and that's, you know, makes the I-5-lery a lot more interesting if a deal like that were to happen. Seattle does need a star player. They need somebody that market can focus their attention on, that hockey can really grab the attention of the average fan in Seattle. They've got the Seahawks there. They've got, obviously, the Sounders. They've got the Mariners. And there might be a basketball team going there really soon as well.
So, and they've got all the college sports as well.
Yeah, the Huskies revival and the Washington State Cougars. So all of that, you know, they do need that star power. Now, that package, though, McCann, Beniers, and a high-end prospect, that seems like a lot for me right now.
It's a great return. I'm making that, like, to be fair, if I'm the Canucks, I'm making that deal.
Yeah, like, in a simple who says no scenario, my Islanders pitch in the last segment, I think maybe the Canucks would say no and we want more, right? That's assuming maybe I'm undervaluing Elias Pettersson as of right now. This one would be, in some eyes, overvaluing Elias Pettersson.
And Seattle says no, yeah.
Yeah, so it's Matty Beniers is their star player right now. He's the guy that everybody's looking at in that market. McCann is their leading point scorer. Like, you're taking 2 premium assets right off their roster. And Elias Pettersson has that potential, but he's shown the floor the last year or so. So I like this deal. I just don't know. It's a hot take. If you can get Matty Beniers in that deal and prospects and Jared McCann, 2 really solid transition players, play with speed, I think you take it and run.
Absolutely. That's a good one. Our next one comes in from @ForReasonsSake on Twitter. We're trading our first for Zacha. We're back to being a contender next year. So Pavel Zacha coming in and complimenting Elias Pettersson or potentially being the number one center here, depending on how things go from that. That's an interesting take, too. I could see some merit to that.
Pavel Zacha, there's been, you know, discussion, at least in media circles, of like, could this be a player that features for, you know, in trade talks? And going back to his days in New Jersey, I thought he was a fit. I thought he was a player that played on the wing a little bit too, but since he's gone to Boston, he's been chosen to play in that first or second line, depending with Elias Lindholm. I just don't know if he gives you that high end, what you need.
This is a guy that has never scored more than 21 goals in a season in the NHL.
If you're looking at a Pettersson and Zacha 1-2 punch down the middle, like, okay.
If he's the number two punch and Pettersson gets back to being
exactly
a number one center.
But if you've got 2 second-line centers, if they click at that level, if Zacha is doing his thing and Pettersson is, you know, more of what we've seen in the last year, where's that high end? right? So I guess the question I'm asking is, anybody that you acquire, like, it's going to be tough to hit a home run to get a 1C. 1Cs aren't available in the league very often. So with Zaka, yes, it gives you that Pew Suter level of scoring, right? Like, what's the – Zaka might be a little bit bigger. He might be a little bit more stronger in certain situations, but the production batch is, based on this, you're near identical to Pew Suter.
That's what I was just going to say, is Zaka has two more years left at $4.75 million per season. I would much rather take that $4.75 million, give it to Pew Suter, keep my first round pick that I'm theoretically giving up for Zaka, and then you can use that pick in some other way to bolster your roster. Like, that part of this makes more sense to me, because Pew Suter has scored more goals this season. And again, whether you believe he can get back to this number or not, you know, we can see going forward, depending on his role and his fit, whether it's with this team or with another one. But why would you give up a first round pick for a guy that, whose ceiling at this point has been Pew Suter, as opposed to just giving Pew Suter money to stay and be Pew Suter on your roster?
Yeah, he's been a borderline 60-point player in the past. 59 points is his career high. But what have you done for me lately? He's in that Pew Suter zone, which was 14, 15 goals previously to his career high, right? So now Suter has jumped that. He's obviously had a heck of a contract here. I feel like that's a bit of a lateral move. Now, if you're saying, okay, 60-point guy, more of a playmaker than Suter, he's done that more consistently. And I just don't see... giving up a first to me doesn't make sense, though. Giving up a premium piece, whether it's a prospect or a first-down pick for that player, I wouldn't do that, because there might be some other options in free agency that might be able to give you that sort of production, 50-point players, that won't cost you a premium asset, that will cost you money, and money doesn't come cheap. But if the cap is going up, you know, you have more to play with. So I don't like the idea of giving up draft picks and premium young players for that.
And that ties into our next hot take from Mike, who writes in and says, the Canucks should not re-sign Suter. They need all the money they can find for elite players. And that is the best argument that I have heard in this market to oppose either re-signing Suter or Besser, is you want the maximum level of flexibility that you can find going into a summer where big money is going to be thrown around, stupid contracts are probably going to be signed, and if you want to meaningfully improve your roster and bring in impact players, you might have to be a part of that spending spree. So I totally understand the thought that Suter shouldn't come back because you need flexibility. I actually don't even think this is that hot of a take, as much as I personally really want to see them sign Pew Suter, because I think if you let Suter leave, then there are way too many questions down the middle, especially with Hedl's uncertain injury status. I do have time for the have as much cap space as possible, has as much flexibility as possible. Don't re-sign anyone so that you've got all sorts of options.
I really like Pew Suter as a player. I think he's a very intelligent player, and he has risen to the occasion of being a better player. But there's always a price on a player. There's always a walkaway number. And is that number $4 million? Is that $4.25? Remember, Dakota Joshua walked into this lineup, developed as a player under Rick Tocchet. Did he get a little bit more money than we expected? Maybe. But he stayed with Vancouver because this is the coaching staff that elevated his game, right? We saw this, maybe not from a contract position, but Connor Garland talks about it all the time. He went into Rick Tocchet's office in Arizona and said, make me an all-situation player, make me an NHL player. And Rick Tocchet helped to do that. So with Pew Suter, what does your loyalty, or what does that work that the coaching staff put into your game and challenge you to do, what does that mean in terms of staying? Does that mean you take a slight discount? Does that mean, no, it's market value? So with Suter, we'll see. But overall, I think in regards to the hot take, cap space is great, but you have to be careful. The free agent class, I think there's going to be some really big mistakes made, where Mitch Marner is a heck of a player. But
even someone like Nikolai Ehlers could get a huge contract this summer. Yeah.
Well, Mitch Marner, I'm not sold on he's going to leave Toronto, but if he does... he doesn't strike me as a guy that wants to sign for another Canadian team. I feel like it's a hometown deal, or you go to an American market where you don't have to deal. I interviewed him last month. He doesn't enjoy the media thing at all times. We've seen those clips where, you know, he's
got shambles in his brains. I think he famously said
exactly
once.
Right. So I don't know how realistic that is. So that's great if you've got a briefcase of money, but somebody's got to be willing to take it. Nick Ehlers, you're right, he's going to get a lot of money. You know, and there's going to be a lot of teams looking for him.
Sam Bennett.
Sam Bennett's another one where there's going to be a lot of teams going after him, and especially if Florida makes another deep playoff run. So having cap space and that flexibility is great. But if you're saying, hey, we're going to let you walk away, we're going to go for the big fish, you better land a big fish. Otherwise, you're just standing there with all this cap space and nothing to do with it.
Which is ultimately what happened for them at the deadline this year, which they received a lot of criticism for. Kind of ties into another hot take here. You were talking about the coaching staff and how that will play into all of this. Noah says Manny Malhotra will turn the team into a Stanley Cup contender. So, again, the subtext here has to be that Rick Tocchet is leaving and that Manny Malhotra is replacing him.
Unless Manny's playing again.
Yeah, well, hey, maybe. You know what?
He's Manny, in great shape.
Every time I see him, he looks in great shape. I'm sure he could still win a draw for you at the very least.
I actually heard a conversation Chris Faber was doing with Jujhar Kela and Arshdeep Bains, and they talked about how he does all the workouts with the players, and he still kills it in the room, in the weight room. So I think Manny is something he might. But in this hot take, it's assumed coaching, of course.
Yes. So, you know, it's an interesting one. Again, we don't know what's going to happen with Rick Tocchet and his future going forward. So we'll have to wait and see with that. But would Manny be in consideration to right away become the NHL head coach? I'm not sure. He hasn't been in Abbotsford too long. There could be some other coaches on the market if they are going to move away from Rick Tocchet that might be more appealing to this management group. And ultimately, at the end of the day, this management group has said their top priority is keeping Rick Tocchet. They've made no bones about that.
Yeah, Manny's done a great job at the AHL level, but it is his first year of pro coaching at the head coach position, right? You want to build in that experience, and that would be expediting that. But with Rick Tocchet, if that happens, I feel like at this point in time with Quinn Hughes, with the players you have on their roster, you need somebody that's been there, done that. You need a trusted voice in the NHL, somebody that's going to, with a Demko, with a Quinn Hughes, with some of the star players, Elias Pettersson, you want to make sure that you're bringing somebody in that has that, you know, that overall, hey, I've been there, I've been done that, and I'm the one that's going to guide this team to the promised land, to the playoffs, because it's that important time. We talk about Quinn Hughes. You know, he said it, is the best coach he's ever had is Rick Tocchet, and if you're going to replace that guy, if it comes to that point, you better believe you're bringing in an experienced voice that commands that room, and it's not their first go-around. So I would say that's a hot take. It'd be kind of crazy if it happens, though.
It'd be really cool. Yeah. For sure. We're tight on time here. We've got two more that we wanted to get to, so we'll go through them really quickly here. Mike the Urologist says, Thatcher Demko wins the Vezina next year. And I think that's best case scenario for everyone.
Yeah, and I like that hot take, because what have we seen with Thatcher Demko? Flashes of brilliance since he's been back. We've seen him make those unbelievable saves. That talent has not gone anywhere. It's still there. You just got to get those games in. I love that hot take.
I think it's a good one, and hopefully it pays off. And if we do this episode again next year, you can circle back and be like, hey, my hot take, it panned out. Look at Demko. He's been tremendous. And we would all love that, certainly. The last one we're going to get to here is from Woodrow, the Eligible Bachelor. Brock Besser will score 40 goals next season on another NHL team.
Ooh, that would sting, wouldn't it? He's got that shot. He's a better player, I think, than the last two or three years, like overall his team game.
And the thing that stands out most to me about this that actually makes it somewhat plausible is if we're assuming that Besser's leaving, it means he's going to free agency, which means he has his pick of his fit. So he can say, okay, who's my center going to be?
Yep.
What's your power play unit look like? What are your chances of being a contender? What sort of minutes am I going to get? He can curate the spot that he goes to. And again, money's going to play a factor as well. But, you know, we know Besser can score 40 goals. Hey, maybe he says, I'm going to sign with the Rangers and reunite with my buddy JT Miller, and we'll have that chemistry together. That could happen. So, you know, would this be great for Canuck fans? Certainly not, but it's not implausible, that's for sure.
Could you imagine if the Rangers somehow got rid of that Chris Kreider contract, 6.5 off the books, and then welcome Brock Besser on that team? That 1-2 punch of JT and Brock on the wing, the hot take on another 40 on another team is plausible for sure. I'm going to go one step further. I think the Rangers could be a realistic option.
My only thing with the Rangers is they look old and slow, And Brock Besser's not old, but he's not a burner. And I think for that New York team, much like we talk about the Canucks needing speed, they're going to need to find speed this offseason.
One thing about the Rangers, though, is they love shiny new things. And this would be a shiny new thing. The Big Apple and the way Drury operates, he likes having basically Ferraris and Lamborghinis in the garage, right? Doesn't matter what year it is, though, but a Ferrari or a Lamborghini. I like this hot take. I like it. We're going to add our piece to it with the Rangers.
So there you go. And that wraps up our hot take episode here on In the Booth. Thanks for contributing. Thanks for joining in. This has been a lot of fun. And we will be back next week. And we'll be back on the air tomorrow. The Canucks and the Ducks, a 1 o'clock face-off. The pregame show will get underway at noon right here on Sportsnet 650.